Yeah, it sounds like you all ran
into being recorded.
Oh, it is now being recorded. Okay, so we're safe at home. We're home free, right? Gloria, what we typically do on these interviews is we have some just real standard questions, but what we really want you to know is that we're so sure that America will want to know who you all were and, you know, your own voice and your own personality and all that, that even though we ask questions and obviously we want the answers to them, we hope that if you have anything interesting that is, you know, important to you, that you just speak up. If a question triggers some kind of memory, just keep talking, because don't worry about just, you know, this is more than just a list of questions. This is capturing for history what you ladies did through World War II and who your personalities are and what you learned from it and what you feel about democracy and all that sort of thing. Anyway, let's start with some simple questions. Give me your name at birth.
Gloria. Well, my name at birth, believe it or not, was Patricia Gysels, G-H-Y-S-E-L-S, a Dutch name. My father was from Holland. However, however, the lady down the street, my mother said, took the name Patricia and had her baby just a couple of days ahead of mother. So mother changed my name, and I'm Gloria.
You wouldn't want two babies and two Patricias in one block, right?
That's what my mother said. She was mad at the other lady for taking the name.
I actually know a kind of similar story to that, where a lawyer was named David Doherty in my hometown, and he named his son David Doherty, and another man named his son David Doherty, and they were both lawyers. Can you believe it?
Oh, my God.
In Huntington, which was at that time 100,000. I think it's probably about 40,000 now.
Oh, good.
Anyway,
excuse me.
Go ahead, please.
Well, my date of birth was 10/31/1923 on Halloween.
We're not going to go there, are we? Tell me, where were you born exactly?
I was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Honestly. Huh. And I understand there's a whole lot of Dutch people up there and actually kind of in the Midwest, Iowa.
Yes, that's
Michigan.
Right. A lot of people were from Holland. Oh, and all my relatives around there, of course, were all there too.
That's interesting. What was it like growing up in Grand Rapids?
Well, I didn't, unfortunately, grow up, but when I was 4 years old, we moved, I think it's only 25 miles, to Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I was raised, in Kalamazoo. And it was a very nice little town, and I was, you could walk every place.
Right.
I walked to school, and I walked everything, and of course, Kalamazoo College was just down the street, and I walked to college when I got in. When you think about that now, it is now a very, very big university, Kalamazoo. And was just a small town thing, but we lived in two or three different places, very nice, and so growing up there was just lovely. It was the last public high school there was Kalamazoo High School and Kalamazoo College.
And you graduated from both then, right?
No, I didn't. I quit college to go to work for the war.
Oh, really? What were you majoring in?
I wanted to be a French teacher.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yes, I did.
I think that's a hard language. I don't know. I'm always embarrassed when I speak French because I know the French would think I was so awkward, you know. So I never had the confidence. So how long had you gone to college?
2 years. It was almost the second year when I decided that I had to go give my stuff to the war. And,
okay,
of course, Kellogg Army Air Base, where I went to work, was just, about 25 miles from Kalamazoo.
Right.
So I got, okay. And that's where I got my job.
And tell us what you did. And by the way, I didn't really introduce Buddy, but you know her already. Buddy's on the line, aren't you, Buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I just want you to know, I knew that you'd talked with her two or three times here recently, and that you talked to her this morning, but I just want you to know she's on the line. Now, the air base, tell us about the air base, because I know nothing whatsoever about this air base.
Oh, Kellogg Air Base was pretty important during the war, and it was a pretty big place, and I went to work there as the secretary for the commanding officer that was in charge of personnel.
Uh-huh.
And we had to not only do secretarial work, but we had to take minutes of meetings.
Uh-huh.
And we took those with a recorder there, recording it, and then we also did it in shorthand. Of course, back in those days.
Oh, gosh, shorthand. I remember shorthand. Now,
yeah.
The recorders, I actually can't tell you that I remember what a recorder looked like back then. I know that in the 60s and 70s, recorders had a cassette tape, but what did they look like? I don't know that.
I think, it's hard for me to remember, Anne, but I think they were a tape, right, on like a record.
And oh, really?
It seems to me, but I'm sure, I can't say for sure. Yeah, I really just don't remember.
You know, that's something that when we transcribe this and after your interview, we have to hire somebody to essentially put it on paper. We'll try to get somebody to look up what a recorder looked like through the wartime.
Remember, but they wanted it to be very, these were on hearing on cases of misuse and stuff that they shouldn't be doing and illegal stuff, and they were very important, so that we had the recorder and myself and another gal, all of
and
us.
And a recorder meaning, the recorder, you're meaning a person.
Yes.
There was a person, so there were three of you.
Yes,
okay.
And we could play that afterwards when we were transcribing our minutes to make sure that all three of us got it right, you know, so that they would know what we were doing. And, of course, I did the other duties, too, but I worked there for, I guess, I don't know, it had to be almost 2 years, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
and
right.
At that point, my family wanted me to move to California, to San Diego, to take care of stay with my sister, who was had a couple of little kids, and she was an alcoholic. And so I flew out to California to be with her, and I immediately in San Diego got a job, because I had quite a bit of experience there, at Coronado Island, where you had to take a ferry over to the island, and worked for the 11th Naval District. This was all Navy, and there I started with the head of the personnel department there.
Okay, now I want to stop for a little bit because I want to catch up and understand it. So, in other words, you were working. What was the name of your first employer there in Michigan? was it the air base, but did you work for...
No, I worked before that, and I went to, I don't know what you call it, a business school or something, because I wanted to go to work, to do something besides going to college, and the war was starting and everything. So I took a course in shorthand, and I worked down in the State Unemployment Office, or Employment Office.
Okay.
And I worked there, and I can't remember. I worked a few other places, but basically that was the job where I was having some a bit of experience.
Okay, and then you, with that experience, that's when you went over to the air base, am I right?
Then that's when I went to the air base, Kellogg Army Air Base.
Uh-huh.
They call it Kellogg because, the Kellogg Company that makes all of what it does is in Battle Creek. It was in Battle Creek, Michigan.
For sure. Actually, I know a little bit about Kalamazoo from that song. I got a gal in Kalamazoo.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that song. Anybody our age knows that song. You know that song, don't you, buddy?
Yeah.
I got a gal in Kalamazoo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun song. It's a swing.
It is.
Swing song. Yeah, right.
And I was singing it along with all of this that I was doing. I was... took dancing lessons, and my mother started me very early. My mother was a professional pianist, and she was felt that I had that talent for it. So she took me to a very good dance studio in Grand Rapids. I learned to tap dance and acrobat and all of that, and I began entertaining when I was about 14 years old. Singing and dancing with her band or the outfit. She would have a trio or she would have a quartet. She also played with big orchestras. She was very much wanted. She was very, very good. And so I went right along with it. And, of course, in those days I could go in, you could take a 14 or 15-year-old into a bar and everything with nobody saying a word.
Right.
And so she took me working with her. So along with all of that, I was a professional dancer all the time and singer.
Is that right?
I was doing that, yes. Then when left for California, of course, no more.
Yeah, so in Michigan, only in Michigan then. Okay, now I want to be real sure, because people who are going to be listening to your history in the future are going to want to know about, basically what did the women do and how were they trained and whatever. So let me see if I'm right about this. When you graduated from high school and you were in college, you decided you want to do something for the war effort, so you went to the employment office. And in the meantime, you learned dictation and secretarial types of talents. Am I correct?
Correct.
Is that? Yeah. And then you went to work for Kellogg Air Base.
Mm-hmm.
And then your sister needed essentially family support, and you moved to San Diego. Am I right?
Right.
Now, tell me again what you did at Kellogg Air Base. Were they taking depositions of war? Of prisoners of war? What was that about?
Yeah, people that were doing things illegally. We had a very, very big case, and I can't remember, honey, to tell you what it was at all, but I know that we did an awful lot of that. But, of course, that was put in between doing the regular secretarial work for the personnel director, the lieutenant commander that was running the colonel, whatever it is, in the air base, and was running the personnel department there. And so I continued doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it very much, and I didn't mind the trip every day back and forth to Battle Creek, because it And it was.
And how did you get there? Did you carpool or what?
No, I had my car, and they took me there. And I had my car, and I took myself there. And I learned to drive right at 14. Remember, back in those days, you could have a full license at 14. And I was driving at 14 for the reason that my mother never drove. So she needed somebody to chauffeur her.
Uh-huh.
So they had me get my license very, very early, as soon as I could. And that.
Oh, this is fascinating. This is, I actually kind of remember when you could get a license when you were 14, but actually, to tell you the truth, the way I remembered it is you had to work on a farm and you could run farm equipment, but I didn't know you could drive on the roads at 14. Pretty interesting.
It was amazing, but that's the truth.
Yeah, that's incredible, really.
Yeah,
well,
right.
Now, when you worked at Kellogg's, you were essentially, your job title was secretary or what?
Just a secretary.
Yeah. What do you remember? You say there were some important cases and people doing things that broke the law. What were some of these things?
Gee, there's an echo, and it's ruining what you're saying. I'll just say it one more time.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering what was, when you say people were breaking the law and you were having to do essentially recordings, these were like depositions. In other words, you were getting, somebody was questioning these people about what had happened legally or illegally. And
correct.
What were some of, can you name a case or remember any kind of even general?
I'm so sorry, dear. I can't remember one thing.
Just don't remember. Yeah, well, that's great. Now, then you went over to San Diego, which is really a beautiful city. Isn't that a wonderful city?
Wonderful.
It's wonderful,
and
truly.
And it was
I made my first
in those days, just wonderful.
Yeah, and I feel a freedom in San Diego. I can't even describe it, but it has something to do with the ocean, and it has something to do with the mix of people and all that, and it's a very special city. But tell me what you did in San Diego again.
In San Diego, I worked for the 11th Naval District, and that was on Coronado Island, which is now connected to San Diego. I mean, you just drive there.
Right.
But at that time, you had to take a boat to get. Oh, it wasn't even far, but at that time, it was an island. Since then, of course, many years later, it became they had a road, and you would just drove back and forth. And it was the 11th Naval District, and I was in the personnel office there, and one of the gentlemen that worked there was a lieutenant commander, and his name was Robert Loken, and that was my first husband.
Oh, I see. That's why your daughter's Loken. Oh, really?
Yes.
And you met him. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And what was his job?
He was. I don't know. Remember what Bob did? I worked for a lieutenant. Another lieutenant commander whose name was Horace Carroll, and he's the one I actually was doing the work for, but of course Bob was there working too. And he was also in the process of ending a marriage. And now I'm a young gal, and I think he was 12 years older than I am, 12 or 13 years older, and I'm a young gal there, and we fell in love at a wonderful time working there. It was just great, but I decided that as the war ended, and I just decided that until he was ready to say the word and do the work, I was leaving. So I left and went back to Kalamazoo, and I told him, when you're ready, if you're ready, I'm here. And he was there very shortly, everything taken care of, and we immediately married.
Oh, I see. And how many children did you have?
I had three.
Mm-hmm.
A and boy, Chris? Two girls and a boy.
And so you had Chris?
Chris, Tia.
T-I-A, Tia?
Uh-huh, D-I-A. Uh-huh. Her name is Andrea, but she's never been called by that, of course.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was Eric.
Okay.
Just the four
and
letters.
So now, where did you all, did you go back to San Diego, or what did you do at that
no,
point?
No, I, at that point, my sister left quite a while before that and went back to Kalamazoo. But, of course, I stayed in San Diego because I worked till the end of the war. And mm-hmm. as soon as it was over and we all celebrated there, that's when I left.
And then where did you raise your children?
Well, I came back to Kalamazoo, and my husband, Bob Loken, was a doctor of, psychology, and he had his doctorate and everything, and he was doing very well. He went to work. After we got married, they asked him if he would go to work at Neiman Marcus in Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Neiman Marcus was a very big place. What's his name? Oh, that ran it. And he was married to a movie star.
I have no idea.
Oh, damn. I can't remember. I'll think of it. And so he got the job there. We moved to Dallas, Texas, and that's where I had the first child, Chris.
I see. So Chris is your oldest.
Yes. And then when we left Neiman Marcus and moved to Champaign, Urbana, and my husband went to work for he was actually a teacher, a professor at a college, and I can't remember more of it than that, but he had a job there, and that's where I had Andrea.
And now Andrea is your second child.
Yes, ma'am. And she's the one I share a house with now.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize that. Oh, that's good. Okay.
I say that because from that marriage, which lasted a good long time, 13 years or so, and and we were in Champaign, Urbana, and that's where I had Eric, the last child. And then after that, marriage ended, and I moved to, even while I was with Bob, we moved to Yonkers, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what's the other town right there? Oh, my God, Gloria, you're sure getting old.
Yonkers. Let's see. I don't.
Yonkers, but also there's another big Scarsdale.
Oh, sure.
And he went to work there. Let's see. That was. I'm sorry. Anyway, I don't know. The marriage ended. My next marriage was in Champaign, Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
And I was married to a man that I didn't want to get married, but Mother said that I ought to do it because I was living with him all the time and so forth. So I did that marriage. That lasted only about 5 years, and I was working all that time. But, of course, now I'm taking care of kids, working on the side, and I didn't, it wasn't anything to do with the service.
Right, right. Well, now, I want to talk to you very seriously about, the work that you did when you dropped out of school, you must have been somewhere around 19 or 20 years old when you started working what we call a Rosie the River these days. You've made real clear that you felt that you needed to do something for the war effort.
Yes, I did.
And tell me about the mood of the times. Sometimes people will say to us that you ladies only went to work for the money, or that you went to work because there were men on the job or whatever. And when I hear that from people who've never talked to a Rosie, I bristle a little bit. But then I want to hear from you in your own words. What was your real motivation to go to work while you were in Kalamazoo and all of that? Did you enjoy it? Did you feel people were pulling together? What was the mood of your office and all of that?
I was very, very strong on working as in a war effort. I felt that was very important. My folks really didn't want me to quit college. They wanted me to stay, of course. And but I felt I had to do something. And I think the war effort was very good. We had so much that we gave to the war, and the rationing, and all of those things that we did. And I just felt that I wanted to be part of it. I definitely did. And I was bound determined that's what I was going to do. So they finally said, okay, if you want to do that, all right. And that's why I started working at the air base. And then when I went out to help my sister, she left, of course, and finally, and went back to Kalamazoo. Her husband was in the Navy, you see, and he was out at sea all the time. And she finally went back to Kalamazoo. And, ooh, is that all right?
Yeah, I've got to, it's just that my cell phone's ringing. Let's let it quit ringing, and then I'll be able to hear you better, and it'll record. I want the recording to be clear. There you go. Well, now, did you ever at any time feel that the public was looking down on you because you were working in factories or working in at air bases or whatever?
No.
No?
I never did. I can imagine what would happen in factories and so forth. It must have been tough, but I cannot lay claim to any of that. I was treated very well, and I loved the work. I loved the people. And, of course, I met the husband there, and there were other guys there that were just as nice as could be, and I didn't have any problem getting dates and so forth. And then when I got married that for the first time, I wanted to have 5 children. And so I just started right out. And that was
you did
it.
Your best as long as you could.
Yeah. The third one was born premature and had to in a, what do you call those, incubator.
Incubator, yeah.
So
Buddy
long.
Has a...
They told me that I really shouldn't have another one for a couple years. And I didn't like that. I wanted to have 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I had to stop at 3.
Yeah. Buddy has a son, by the way, who was quite premature. And he's one of the nicest people I've ever met, really, ever.
Well,
he's very special, and he means a lot to this organization. Tell me this, Gloria. The level of work that you were doing, in other words, you're in an office setting, and most of the women, I would say 3/4 of the women that we have interviewed, have worked in more like labor type of jobs.
I know.
You were in an office setting. There were I remember that my mother was a secretary through the war, and there was secretarial pools. So they'd have like 18 women working on a typewriter in one room. Can you describe exactly what the rooms were like or what the work was like on a day-to-day basis?
A very large office, but I worked for one man, and I was it, except when we had to do the cases, and then they would get another secretary. Now, they had a lady that ran the purse, the secretaries, under the guy that was the head of the personnel department, and she kept track of who the secretaries were and bringing them in and so forth. And so she had people ready whenever they wanted somebody extra for anything like that. And
so basically she supervised a group and you worked in a one-to-one setting.
Right.
I
remember her very well because she had migraine headaches. And in those days, when she went into a migraine headache, she, literally blinded herself and couldn't speak or talk for, I don't know, a long time. And she had
one of our girls had that real bad, and she'd just sink to the floor and hold on to her head.
And you're talking about, Buddy, you're saying when you were riveting at Curtis Wright up in Buffalo, one of the riveters?
When I was in the Coast Guard.
Uh-huh.
One of our medics got those migraines, and boy, she went to the floor holding on.
Oh, it's just terrible, and that's why I remember her so much.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's very, very interesting. Well, now, you were an entertainer. Tell me this. You were an entertainer in Michigan, but you didn't do any of that in California. Am I correct?
No, ma'am.
Yeah.
Didn't do any of it. I was working very, we were working very hard.
And what were your hours? What were your hours, Gloria?
I don't remember anything changing from a 8 until 5
day,
sort of thing. No.
And so basically, you didn't work weekends or nights or whatever.
No, not unless there was something special that they had to have done, and they would call.
We've lost track of this lady, and I think she's died in the meantime, but here in Charleston, West Virginia, we had a Rosie, the riveter, a defense worker, who graduated from West Virginia University, took the civil service exam, and she was the secretary to the Secretary of the Navy, and she did depositions. And she didn't realize that at the time that she was doing depositions that were to be used in the Nuremberg trials. And so that's why I was asking you if I suspect that some of those people that were being questioned were they prisoners of war? Do you know?
I'm sorry, dear. I do not know.
Don't remember.
I can't remember. I'm so sorry. I just can't remember.
Gloria, I'm 77. I was 6 at the end of the war. My mother went to work in a factory when I was probably...
You're a baby
I'm a baby, yeah. That's what.
Yes, you are.
I said to Buddy once a long time ago, she said, you're our mother, because I'm always herding him up doing this and that. And I said, no, you're my mother. And she said, I'm not that old. So
yes,
I laughed really hard. And actually, I broke my hip in January, and I feel very much older now than I did last year. I'll promise you that. Yeah, I've got nerve damage, and it looks like I'm never going to be able to really lift my foot properly. But that's another story. But tell me this now. The you never worked for the USO or any of that. Do you remember
She was trying to get up there.
I remember the USO, and we thought it was so wonderful. And Bob Hope came there, and, oh, God, all of those. It was just marvelous. I thought it was all those shows and all the work that they did to entertain and help the guys out. It was just wonderful.
Did you have anybody in your family who went to war, and or even a close acquaintance, and did they come back safely?
My brother Richard was in the war, and he was a CB, and he was down in Africa, and on a ship there. I've forgotten what they went into Africa, as you will recall. And he worked there, and he was a CB, and he came home safely and was fine.
Is that
right? The war ended. Yep.
That's good. Well, now, do you think this experience changed your life? Would have you ever thought if you had been a French teacher, it's hard to imagine that you didn't do things, but what do you think your life would have been like if you had not been a defense worker?
Gee, I don't know. You never think about stuff like that because life was going good. I had good jobs, and then I started having kids, and I was able to stay home.
Yeah, right. That's a blessing, isn't it?
Yes, it was.
I do worry about our American society now. As much as I believe in American, and women having rights and freedoms and all that, it really worries me that the family, the breakup of the family, there's been a real severe change in family, and it's pretty serious. So you were able to stay home, and you were glad you were able to stay home with your children.
I didn't go back to work until that. I think it was the first divorce, and then, of course, I went right back to work because all I would take is from my husband is child support, and I was very angry, of course, and I didn't want to take anything from him, but I had to take child support, and then, of course, I immediately went to work for myself, and that's what I did. And I started out in a bank. Flagship Bank of America, and of course that name is gone. Years and years and years ago, somebody bought that bank, and it went on and on. I don't know what the hell the name of it would be today. And I started out there learning, and I ended. And that was when they finally were bringing in, for the first time, computers were bringing in into offices, and I, was learning that too, and I worked right along and made money. I had good jobs, and I ended up in the bank as a investment officer.
Oh, really?
And enjoyed that. I worked for, and I, after I'd been there a while, I became the secretary to the president of the bank, and then from there I went to become an investment officer, and I enjoyed that very much.
Interesting. If you had to name like three different kinds of skills or attitudes that you learned when you worked in the defense, for the war effort, what would they be? Like, simple things like organizational skills or, teamwork, or what would be some of the things that you would name that you think you learned from doing office work in the defense time?
I think I really can't claim to anything very important except that I enjoyed the secretarial work. It was something that I really, really liked, and I was good at. I took very good shorthand, and I really can't think of words that would say any more than that. I know these guys were into their jobs, and they were working very hard, and boy. Of course, there were all officers and enlisted men that worked there, and they were all had to do their job. They were in the Navy and the Army, and that was it. and they had to work. So we were pretty dedicated. It was, and it was very interesting.
Well, now, do you think that you taught your girls anything differently? In other words, did you teach them to be independent? Do you think that your experience changed how you might have advised your daughters?
I don't know. I was very, when I started having them, my husband and I, as I told you, he was a psychologist, and I, we were both very, very environmentally concerned couple, and we taught our children, and we were also very interested in people being equal. And we taught our kids that everybody was equal, and there was no difference whatever color you was, and that the environment was very important, and that animals were just as important as human beings. And we were very, very pronounced with that. And we also didn't believe in harsh punishment or anything like that. There was another way to take care of things, and we did. Two of my kids ended up in the State Department, and they worked for USAID and were overseas. I have lived in Africa. I've lived in Morocco. I've lived in Eritrea and Zimbabwe. And by that time, by the way, I was in a third marriage of a man who was retired from the Navy. And I traveled all the time and visited my kids and lived with them for periods of time. So I enjoyed all of that very much, and they were very much into working for the State Department. The third one became a nurse and still is, and she runs a big home health care company.
I'm confused. Do you have three daughters now? Did you have a daughter?
Two daughters and the son.
And the third one, meaning your son?
Yes, Eric.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And he's a nurse?
No, Dia ended up being the nurse. Eric and Chrissy are the ones that were in the State Department. Worked for USAID.
Okay. Well, now, this is all so fascinating. So one of the things I first said after interviewing the women for about a year, and I've been doing this work 7 years and never been paid and worked day and night and all that.
Oh, my God.
But one of the things that I began to realize is, you know, we always heard through the wartime and not long after how you're going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Perry. And I think the same thing is true of the women. How are you going to keep them knitting with yarn after they've seen Lockheed, is what I said.
Yeah.
In other words, once you've had that experience, seeing people who are working for something that is totally global in its effort, and you've worked with different kinds of people and doing, you know, a small piece of the big picture, it really changes you, I think. And I really feel like that my own mother and to some extent my own experience as a child through the war has made me more worldly, has made me want people to pull together. But then I read recently there was a paper put out by Dale Carnegie. It was for training people of different ages. And it said people of my age want cooperation. They want cooperation on the workplace floor. But young people don't want that. They want to work individually. They want to connect maybe to one or two people, especially by texting or whatever. But they don't particularly want teamwork. And I think that's something we miss. And so one of our missions now in our organization is to try to teach people to pull together again, because I think we've become so individualistic that we're losing the ability to be a strong country because we don't know how to pull together. Maybe
I think probably the point is very well made, and it's, I don't know whether it's the new inventions, you know, everything that they have from smartphones all the way down, iPads, everything mm-hmm. else, makes it that way. I'm just not sure. I know that we did work together.
Yes.
We pulled together. And probably, I don't know whether, how much that happens today.
And I don't either, and I'm really trying to figure that out because in our organization, rather than just do interviews, we put an awful lot of time into creating projects that can be models for others to follow. So, for example, we've named the first government building in America the Rosie the Riveter Building, and we want other people to do the same thing. We've done a whole lot of work with women and Girl Scouts now to, and what we're doing at this point is the Girl Scouts chose the project to plant a dogwood tree in 8 different locations in 4 different states at the same moment. So at 1 o'clock on 1 o'clock on May 14th, we plant a dogwood tree, and that's to show unity. But the big question is, you know, where is this country and where is democracy going to go if people are not pulling together? I don't know that you can have a really healthy democracy if you don't have higher level goals that you're trying to work together toward. It bothers me, and I just don't see how. But the point is that rather than just do interviews and walk away and love the women and be so glad myself that I got to know people like you, we are trying to do projects. Now, on Labor Day, now, where are you going to be on Labor Day? Are you, you'll be in Virginia, right?
No, dear. I am moving for several years now. When I moved to Florida, I moved there in 1965. Mm-hmm. I moved to Florida permanently. Mm-hmm. And I, before that, I had been at the Vero Beach Yacht Club. My husband became the commodore of it, and I ended up being, I started out just doing their books for them. I'm a mathematician, and I love numbers and this sort of thing. So I started doing the Vero Beach Yacht Club, and I became the manager of the yacht club. And I ran that yacht club for, I've forgotten, several years. And then I, when he, well, I just kept right on working. And I worked in Vero Beach, and I ran that yacht club. And I had a couple of other ones before that. But I agree with you. I think that it'd be great if more, like
if we could just figure out how we're going to do this across boundaries. With all of our modern communications, from texting to Facebook to whatever, you know, YouTube and all that, I think there's a real chance that on Labor Day, when we want to do another planting, that we can get even. We had 8 locations in 4 states on May 14th, and we were just trying it out to see how long it would take, whether or not people really related to it. Did the girls really relate to the Rosies? Did the Rosies, you know, really feel honored, et cetera, et cetera? And I think, by and large, we really had a positive experience. So we're going to try it again on Labor Day. It might be the day before, but on or around Labor Day. And by the way, one thing we just have asked the U.S. Department of the Navy to do is we've asked them to find a ship where a bell could be rung. You can't plant a dogwood tree on a U.S. naval ship, but they could ring a bell. They could ring a bell, and we've asked the Secretary of the Navy to ring a bell at this very same time that these trees are being planted so that people don't have to plant trees if they don't have the space or can't find a tree or whatever, but ask people to get to know the Rosies, bring those Rosies into a place, and do something together, even if it is as simple as ringing a bell. So where will you be on Labor Day? Because I'd love to include you in this if you feel like you can be.
Would be marvelous, but that is the weekend that the people are moving out that own the house that we are renting, my daughter and I, and we're moving to Key Largo.
Oh, is that right?
Down on the top of the Keys. I've been going there every winter because I became a Floridian, and I finally, of course, the kids insisted I move up to Virginia after my husband died.
Right.
And because I was alone, and
kind of keep in mind that I do not know the time. That one of the things that is complicating is it looks like we want to have, it looks like at least two allied nations want to take part, and there's 6 hours difference between here and Poland, for example.
Oh, golly.
And so if we do something at noon, it's 6 p.m. over there. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. I'm just saying that I don't think we want to do it on Sunday at noon because people are just getting out of church. But for whatever, what we'd really love to do is have you do something. I mean, you know, just go out and buy a school bell. Doesn't matter. And, you know, get 5 or 6 people around you to say, you know, thank you, Gloria, or thanks, plain and simple, Gloria, or something like that. And take pictures and let's show people that it doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to take $1 zillion from the U.S. government, but that people can do something to thank the Rosies. And to me, what the Rosies symbolize is pulling together and doing highest quality work for a higher goal. There's those three elements. So you have to have a higher goal, and that was winning the war. You have to do highest quality work. You can't do sloppy work and build an airplane that's going to fall out of the sky. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be have a higher goal, do first quality work, and pull together toward that goal. And that's what
I am an avid bridge player, and I play usually 2 days a week. And I used to play a lot more than that, but I for a long time, have been playing 2 days a week. And we play at the Civic Club in Key Largo, and, of course, up here I play, too. And I'll get some of those girls and tell them all about you.
Please do that. You know, if you get your group together and, you know, all it doesn't matter what you do, but let's do something. You know, when the Iraq War first started, that's not the way to say it, at 9/11, and that was pretty serious to me because I'd been in and out of the World Trade Center working on a project with the Port Authority of New York, and I was in Boston at the time, immediately you heard from people they wanted to do something. I hear all you Rosies every time, and you just said it in your interview, you wanted to do something. I think people want to do something for our democracy, for preserving, you know, human dignity and all that, but they don't know what to do. And all I'm saying is you don't have to do huge projects. We have some pretty big projects that we're working on, and we're looking for money for a 4-year business plan for $7 million. But in the meantime, that money's not coming, so what do? We plant dogwood trees with Girl Scouts at the same moment. People want to do something,
nice.
Gloria.
We
want to do something. So,
my son was a Boy Scout, and my daughter, too, the daughters, and they all loved it, and they did it, and we went to many, many things. I think the Scouts are very, very good. That's just wonderful.
Yeah, and I think it is, too. And so what I'm saying is you'd be thinking about what you can do. It might not be on Labor Day, which is Monday. It might be on late Sunday afternoon or something. But on that weekend is the weekend that we have decided we want to do something. It could even be the Saturday before, which would be September 3rd. But the point is that you all did the work behind the scenes to make it possible to go into D-Day with those zillions of ships and Goodyear blimps and tanks and PT boats and all that sort of thing. And a year and a half between the beginning of the war and D-Day, it was incredible what was produced in this country. And we can do it again. And, yes, somebody's going to ask me who's going to give me the $8 trillion we need to do it. And my answer is it doesn't take $8 trillion to plant 8 dogwood trees in 8 different locations and get to know women who made a serious contribution to this country who have been underrecognized. Let's just do it. And, let's just do it. And I do believe that people want to do something. And so what we've been trying to do over these 7 years is not just get the interviews, but try to figure out what little projects can we do where people get together with you, Rosies. The important thing is that you work together and that we have found that if the Rosies just go in and do an interview, there's no record kept, Gloria. And, you know, maybe the kids remember and maybe they don't. Maybe they remember accurately, and I kind of think they often don't. You know, third graders can't understand what this is all about. But, you know, if you name a building, a room in a school, the Rosie the Riveter building, and then put up on the wall the pictures of the woman young and now, and have the books there about what the Rosies did, it's a whole different thing. And if we start using the phrases like "we pull better when we pull together," or one of the man who was on our board for a long time as a Medal of Honor recipient used the phrase, "we did it together. We did it together then, we can do it together again." Uh-huh. That's pretty much what our mission is all about. And it's very different than just doing interviews and putting them in museums. We think museums are a serious part of it, but they're not sufficient to get the public involved and to really make the women feel honestly, not only thanked, but, you know, I know you want to be thanked, but most of all, you still want to do something. I can tell you do. You know, just to say that you...
I would be glad to do something. As I say, that unfortunately, Sandy and her husband are moving out of the house on Labor Day weekend, and she said we can move in any time after that, and of course we're going to be in the process of moving in there right after Labor Day.
Maybe we'll just get somebody to you get a video camera of yourself at 1 o'clock, and maybe you can hold up some piece of memorabilia or a picture of yourself as a young woman and say, I'm still doing it, I'm helping my daughter and son-in-law move, or whatever. But, you know, let's show unity. And I'm not necessarily talking about you on that day, but I'm just saying we've got to show people that we really do understand that women's place is no longer in the home, but the most important thing is that women should have real, real confidence that if we pull together, we can do incredible things.
Absolutely, and we have to stop being second base and inferior and have the big jobs. We can do it, and we've done it, and we do it a hell of a lot better than the men.
So, you said it. I didn't, but that doesn't mean I don't agree.
Right.
My goodness. Well, I've really loved talking with you. I know that it's been very difficult to get with you at different times and so forth, but I'll be sending you, it'll probably be 2 months or so, my report to on this particular very small grant. The grant was for $1,500 to do the interviews and to get them transcribed and copied and so forth is $6,000. So I'm trying to come up with the other $4,000 and some dollars. I can't remember what it is. But the point is that certainly by middle August or late August, you'll have a copy of this, and we will also have it sent over to different libraries and museums. And if you know of a school or a library that would like to have a copy, you let us know so we can be sure and send them a copy, not just of the CD with your voice, but of the somebody's going to transcribe this and put it down on paper.
I see. I'm right near a public library here in Falls Church, And
I love
I can
Falls Church.
By.
It's a really neat city.
Right. Now, you're in Charlestown.
I'm in Charleston, West, not Charlestown, but Charleston. It's the capital of West Virginia.
Yeah, you're in there.
And I came back to my... Go ahead.
My daughter lives in Falling Waters.
Yes. Now, Falling Waters, if you think of the state of West Virginia being the palm of your hand and put your little finger up and your thumb out, Falling Waters is pretty much at the end of your thumb.
It sure is.
And I'm right in the middle of the state where if you fold your three fingers down with your pinky up, I'm where the your fingernail would be. That's Charleston. And it takes me 10 hours by train to get to Washington.
Oh, boy. Well, I drive out there all the time. In fact, I'm going next week on the 18th for a week or two. My daughter is having her second hip operation. Apparently the first one is not correct, so she has to go back and have that. So I'm going out to stay with her in Falling Waters.
Which oh, really?
She has a house right on the Potomac River, and it's very beautiful.
It's beautiful in there. I love that part of the state. I just love it.
It's very lovely.
Yeah.
But she goes to Charleston a lot, and, of course, Shepherdstown. And
now, you're thinking of Charlestown, and Charlestown is different than Charleston. Charlestown is out on the eastern panhandle. Charleston is in the interior of the state.
Right.
And it's from Falling Waters, it's about maybe, I would say it's a six-hour drive.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
well,
it's a whole different...
You're right, that little finger up there, it's a bummer just driving out from here, but because
yeah.
It can avoid that traffic. But anyway, it's very nice, and I think it's wonderful what you're doing, and I will talk
well,
to
Well, I'm trying hard.
It.
We're understaffed and underfunded, and I'm 77, and I've had to face over the last 3 or 4 months that I am now disabled, and I had not expected that. So I can't really walk like I need to go to the post office today, and I'm going to have to wait till somebody can go for me and that kind of thing. But, you know, it hasn't stopped me yet, so I'm pretty stubborn.
It sounds to me like you're doing just great. I know you have to slow down when you have a problem like that. Fortunately, at this point, lucky, however, I've had umpteen things that I've done up to 92, as you can imagine. I have a new back, and I've had, God knows how many operations for this and that. So I know what you mean, but it's hard to be disabled. I can understand that.
It is hard, and, frankly, I still, in a way, when I run into this kind of hardship, I then realize who I really am, because that's not going to stop me. If my mind quits and my body really can't, go on, that's one thing. If I were to, say, have cancer and really be suffering that way.
Right.
But so far, so good, Gloria. And, I'm trying to launch a national Rosie the Riveter movement by Thanksgiving. I don't know if we can get the money and the support we need to do it, but that's my goal. And then on Labor Day, which will be only, basically it's 2.5 months before Thanksgiving. On Labor Day, we really want to have a ship ringing a bell out in some harbor somewhere. It might be San Diego, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. What is your, your address isn't on here, is it?
It should be. 5313F.
Hold on.
Okay.
I don't see. I see Charleston, West Virginia, 25313. What is your street?
The street address is 5313.
5313.
And then you have to put the word F, letter F. It's a sweet F.
An F, go ahead.
F like Frank. And then Charleston, West Virginia, 25313.
That's all your addresses, just five?
Yeah, and of course our organization name is Thanks, Plain and Simple. So we create projects.
Thanks.
Or just the Rosie the Riveter project is fine.
Okay, and just and it's 5313F.
Yes, and then the zip is 25313. So the zip and the address are very much alike.
They sure are. All right, and what kind of a, is this a house or a building or?
It's a, actually when I came back to the state, my home state of West Virginia from Boston, I wanted to live a place where I could have birds and flowers and work. So I chose an apartment complex that has very large lawns. So in other words, I'm in an apartment. The office has been converted from an apartment.
I see.
So it's a suite F is basically gets it there every time. And sometimes I just don't put suite on there. To be honest, one time when I said suite F, and you know what F means, and they thought, they made a joke about it, so I just say 5313F. You could put apartment, that probably would work.
All right.
But it's not quite it's not really an apartment, it's more like a townhouse.
And I send my contribution to you.
Yes, that would be great, and that would be super. And I sure appreciate it. And at some point now, we really need to get you, you know, involved. By the way, on Labor Day, one of our hopes is that the people of the Netherlands gave to the United States carillons, these, you know, collection of bells in a tower. And it's on the George Washington Memorial Parkway.
I've been there many times.
Have you really? Well,
sure.
Now that's where the bells came in because I was there May 5th when the ambassador reopened the bells, and he said to me and to the group, and then I went up with Rosie the Riveter. From Morgantown, he said, you know, that those carillons were made by melting down cannons for the bells, for the carillons. And I went to him later, and I said, you know, that's a new way of saying from swords to plowshares. Why don't we say from cannons to carillons, and let's make a bell a symbol. And he very much related to that. Then, oddly enough, Gloria, I didn't do this, but oddly enough, I had just said that, and that was May 5th, and then on May 14th, it was raining so hard in one of the locations where we were planting these trees that the woman, the Rosie who was there, could not go outside. So our board member, who's a retired naval captain, Bill Bonnet, said, well, we'll just have the Girl Scout rang a bell, and he didn't even know about the carillons. He didn't know a thing about it, and so she rang a bell at the very same moment the tree was planted, and now people are saying, if I can't plant a tree, I want to ring a bell.
That's wonderful.
Then that led us going to the U.S. Secretary of the Navy and saying, on Labor Day, when we do something simultaneously across the country, and I also believe it will happen in Poland and England and the Netherlands, we will also ring a bell.
That sounds marvelous. You know, every Friday night, you go across the street where the Iwo Jima thing, and the U.S. Army performing band, and all sections that go with it perform for an hour or so, and you can take a picnic and sit there and... My two daughters lived across the street from that building a long time ago, and of course we went every Friday night to hear the bands. I told my daughter Dee, I said I would really like to go another time before we move because it was just marvelous.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. And I'm going to be in Washington in about 3 weeks. Maybe I can ring you and maybe. Now, you're in Falls Church, so you're probably, what is that, about an hour and 10 minutes from D.C., something like that?
Oh, no, it's not that far.
We have a man. Last year we were invited by the Netherlands, the Embassy of the Netherlands, to bring rosies in. We brought in 14 rosies. Now, the problem was that I couldn't I didn't really have the time or the staff to get them from all over the country, and we couldn't afford to pay people to come. They had to come on their own. But the point is that the Dutch have been very, very, very involved with us and very happy.
Oh, good. I'm very proud of them.
Yes, and this is why I'm thinking that at some point, because we are working very closely with the Dutch now, I'm thinking that maybe with your husband's affiliations and your children's last name and all that, maybe we can do something. Maybe if we meet with the Embassy of the Netherlands in 3 weeks or so, perhaps you can join in that meeting.
Oh, golly, I don't think I would probably be any help to you, dear, but I think it sounds just
well,
wonderful.
Just be aware that we want to involve you, and
sure
we don't want
will.
To push you, because we, you know, I certainly know what it's like not to feel like doing something and not to be able to. But as you can comfortably be involved, we want you to participate, because we're trying to show the world that you all are not dead yet, and even if you were dead, you are powerful people, powerful people. Just because nobody asked you what you did and the country didn't celebrate it doesn't mean that you didn't do a huge amount of work behind the scenes. And it's now time that you ladies got visible. That's what we're trying to do, is get the public to know who you all are.
I think it sounds wonderful, sweetheart, and I will sure be listening, and I
all
will
right.
do a lot of talking.
All right, that's great. I'll try to send you a picture of one of our roses with the King and Queen of the Netherlands. When we went to the embassy last year, and then we went over to the Netherlands with some roses, the King and Queen of the Netherlands found out about it, and they got a hold of the embassy and told the embassy they wanted me to bring roses into Arlington Cemetery. So we brought them
good.
In. And we've got some really neat photos of the King and Queen with some roses.
Oh, that's lovely.
It is,
very
really.
Lovely.
We're working hard at it. All right, my dear. It sure is good to know you, Gloria.
Very nice and lovely to talk to you. And
thank you so much.
And Buddy, I don't know, think she's probably still there, but
I think she had to hang up. She had a commitment at noon, I think.
Uh-huh.
And
well,
she had to leave about maybe 20 minutes ago to meet a noon appointment.
Well, my pleasure to talk to you, dear.
Mine, certainly,
very,
for sure.
Very, very nice, and good luck to you, and
thank
I'll
you
be
so
much. As
much
talking as I can.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye now.
My contribution to you.
Oh, I sure appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Recording has ended for this call.